Thank you for joining me tonight. I really appreciate you, each and every one of you. I'd like to come back to the authentic view. Another way of saying that would be don't know. This is nearly impossible. And as an illustration of that, I'd like to play a little clip from an Audible book. Most of these come from Japan, and they're kind of like parables. They're kind of like have a message and a story that there's something there for us. You know, it reminds me of like before we had all these other forms of communication, and we had to tell stories in order to get the message out as an illustration of what we're up against. I'd like to play a little clip from an Audible book.
Trading dialogue for lodging. Provided he makes and wins an argument about Buddhism with those who live there, any wandering monk can remain in a Zen temple. If he is defeated, he has to move on. In a temple in the northern part of Japan, two brother monks were dwelling together. The elder one was learned, but the younger one was stupid and had but one eye. A wandering monk came and asked for lodging, properly challenging them to a debate about the sublime teaching. The elder brother, tired that day from much studying, told the younger one to take his place. "Go and request the dialogue in silence," he cautioned. So the young monk and the stranger went to the shrine and sat down. Shortly afterwards, the traveller rose and went in to the elder brother and said, "Your young brother is a wonderful fellow. He defeated me." "Relate the dialogue to me," said the elder one. "Well," explained the traveller, "first I held up one finger, representing Buddha, the enlightened one. So he held up two fingers, signifying Buddha and his teaching. I held up three fingers, representing Buddha, his teaching, and his followers, living the harmonious life. Then he shook his clenched fist in my face, indicating that all three come from one realization. Thus he won, and so I have no right to remain here." With this, the traveller left. "Where is that fellow?" asked the younger one, running into his elder brother. "I understand you won the debate." "Won nothing. I'm going to beat him up." "Tell me the subject of the debate," asked the elder one. "Why, the minute he saw me, he held up one finger, insulting me by insinuating that I have only one eye. Since he was a stranger, I thought I'd be polite to him, so I held up two fingers, congratulating him that he has two eyes. Then the impolite wretch held up three fingers, suggesting that between us we only have three eyes. So I got mad and started to punch him, but he ran out, and that ended it."
They saw what they wanted to see.
If I were to employ a little bit of logic, I would say that they both had different points of views.
How is it helping them? There's this view, and then there's that view. And I sit there and go, "No, wait a minute. That's not correct. There's the reality. The views are not the reality. One is not correct and the other one is also correct. No, neither is correct. What's correct? The understanding, the wisdom is correct. But that's not attainable from a view." Bodhidharma taught not to rely on words or your intellectual understanding, but directly on this mind. couple nights ago, I watched an old movie. It was about a Muslim who actually was a Jew. He was adopted by Muslims when he was a child, only he didn't know it. And he grew up a Muslim and had a young son and a wife. And then he discovered that he was, in fact, Jewish. And the whole story is about these two groups of people and how they react and treat each other. So it was supposed to be a comedy. It was from 2010, I think. But I didn't find it very funny because of where we're at right now. So, but I also found it to be very true. And the same as this particular parable here, this story is very true about how people can be doing the same thing and meaning something totally different and not getting each other. When Buddha held up the flower, the Kasapas understood and smiled. That's a whole different experience than your view versus Buddha's view. There was no view. But this isn't something you can explain or rationalize or talk about from an intellectual view. You just can't. We can't understand. The only thing you can understand from that story that we just heard is that's what our conundrum is. That's what we're dealing with. As long as we have these views. If they had a don't know mind, a mind that was clear like space, how would that be different? A similar experience one time with a Zen master early on in my experience of doing a koan, and he asked me, "Well, what's your original face before you were born?" And I gave him some smart Buddhist answer, intellectual, wonderful answer that I thought up. And he kind of smiled and he said, "Oh, now you're just being smart." And when he said that, I had this realization of what I was doing, that this was this fabrication, this projection coming from all my identification with all these things that I call self, a view, and not a correct view, just the work I have to do. It's just the work to undo everything that I've added on to create this image of who I am. So anyway, all this fell off, and I said something like, I was kind of frustrated, and I just said, "Well, my mother is a good enough answer." And he popped up, and he just smiled, and he looked at me like somehow I had said the right thing. And I was dumbfounded. I was like, "Huh?" So in that moment of having to just stop pretending and be authentic, I had the opportunity to blast right through it, you see, and just be authentic. And that's all we're trying to do, actually, with ourselves, is just be authentic. Stop bullshitting. And we don't even know we're doing it. Now, obviously, the one guy that had one eye, that's his obsession. He sees everything in the world from one eye. And the other one, from all his learned studying of Buddhist scriptures, blah, 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 thinks he's being smart. Neither of them approached what the real problem is. I think for me, that's what the story's about. Is, oh, look, here's what our problem is. Here's what we're up against. Our own ideas, our own thoughts, how things are, instead of having a don't know mind that's clear like space so that intuition and wisdom can flow, we're projecting, which is again like all these metaphors we have, looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, and whatever you want to say about it.
Doesn't the just the format of debate take you away from a clear mind and authenticity?
Yes.
So that's the whole piece that I'm stuck on in the story, is why the traveling monks have debates.
Maybe just to have that reflection. That very reflection. I mean, why did I have that debate? And what happened for me? What's your original face? And I made some sort of smart answer. Oh, it's Buddha, you know, it's this, it's that. It's the universe talking through, you know, it's the light of love. It's, you know, I could go on and be, you know, really poetic about it, but not authentic. So I think all those dialogues and those koan things are all just expedient means. They're designed to be troubling. They're designed to be sort of mess with you. In the self-discovery of sitting and being still and seeing your own mind reflected in how it works, and while you're just being the observer and you're observing, right? I mean, it can really get wild in here. I was owned by my monkey mind, as we put it. Now, it doesn't affect me that way anymore, but this is, I'm just giving you sort of a historical view of how crazy the mind, at least from my point of view, from my experience, is. The monkey mind is the monkey mind. It has no solution to this problem we were just exploring of what's real and what's not. I guess just to sum it up, I'm just saying, you know, I don't have any judgment about it being right or wrong. Religions, you know, have rules and regulations and traditions of, you know, the Ten Commandments, for example. There's things that have been created to try to help us through this maze of our own creation. And that's all well and good. It's sort of the outside, you know, that's sort of approaching it from the phenomenal experience. You know, behave this way, do this, and this will happen, do this, and that'll happen, you know, sort of that aspect of it. Like my counting or doing a mantra, you know, if I do it this way, it has this effect. If I do that, it has that effect. But it's still not really understanding. It's just using a tool to kind of get through it. I guess my whole point here tonight was really about how difficult it is to understand from the idea of myself what this is. I have to break through that self-identification idea of who this is here, sitting here, in order to see it as it actually is. And that's that beginner's mind. It's that don't know mind. It's like when you think you know, you've already lost it. If I'm projecting from an ego point of view that I'm right, every time I've done that, I've always ended up falling on my face. So when I started tonight and I said, look, I really appreciate you. That's coming from an authentic place. And I think that that is something we can do. We can do that. It's like the other night I talked about bowing and this thing about putting our hands together like this. And if you're authentically bowing with all of you, something something happens there that is beyond this whole idea of self, of I'm doing it. I'm the one bowing. It's not that. It's just bowing. So yeah, so I getting back to your point about, you know, why do this in the first place? I think that's why. So this story sort of helps understand that, you know, it helps you to understand how difficult this is. Here's two people thinking they're actually talking to each other. Just coming back to don't know. All right. Well, thanks. Good night. Thank you.